Hello, it's Debbie again. It's Wednesday, July 29th, 2015. I am reading from the heraldreview.com website for the Herald and Review, and we'll start with some local news. Durfee opens doors for kindergarten exploration. Durfee's a magnet school. This is by Valerie Wells from the Herald and Review staff. Decatur. Only one child shed a tear at the first day of kindergarten safari at Durfee Magnet School on Monday. "We usually have several," said Rita Ellis, instructional coach. "The district used to hold a district-wide kindergarten welcome event at Hope Academy," said Principal Sarah Oakes, "but this year instructed buildings to organize their own events if they wished. We decided we really wanted more than a drop in and say hello," she said. "We wanted a chance to give our kindergarten kids a head start. Many of the kids we get haven't had a lot of preschool experience, so that first week at school can be a little rough, is a little bit rough. They're away from their parents, sometimes for the first time. There are a bunch of kids here. It's hot. They rode the bus for the first time." Much like freshman orientation at Decatur's high schools, the event at Durfee this week allows the new students to have the building to themselves, meet their teachers, learn the school rules and where things are, and have a trial run of sorts before the school officially begins August 17th. Oak said the staff even organized it so they get to practice riding the bus. The children will attend half days all week, and that allows their teachers and staff to get to know them, have some fun with them while sneaking in some academics at the same time. Kindergarten is a full day district wide when the school year starts for real, with no half day option any longer. So without easing into the routine, it can be difficult for a child going to school for the first time, said teacher Roxy Daniels. She discovered on Monday that two of her students have milk allergies, which is important to know when breakfast is served. When the breakfast is served in the classroom, we can assess them and find out where they are academically, Alice said, which is also helpful for teachers to know before the school year begins. Some of the students, like 5-year-old Marshawn Simon, can already spell their first and last names. "I want to have fun and go outside and play," Marshawn said when looking forward to kindergarten. He doesn't know any of his classmates, unlike some of the students who live near each other and already friends. Durfee is a magnet school that focuses on technology and accepts students from throughout the district. "We really want to create an experience that would be like the first day, only not as overwhelming," Oak said. That's the end of that article. Progress City comes to life with Farm Progress Show prep. This is by Chris Lusavardi, who's a Herald and Review staff writer. Decatur. The transformation of Progress City USA to be ready for the Farm Progress Show is fast taking shape. With a little more than a month to go before the event, tents have started to go up and work to complete the first phase of a $1 million expansion of the site is underway. Rick Weil, the show's operations manager, is confident everything will be in place for the show, which is September 1st to 3rd. "We have a lot to do in a short time," Wild said. "I'm comfortable feeling it will be done. There's a good chance it will go to the last minute." Wild said the roads in the expansion area on the south end of the exhibit field won't be paved in time for this year's show. Instead, work started last week on pouring lime to establish a hard base for the roads that is intended to still drain well, he said. Wild said the roads will be paved during a second phase of the expansion before the show in 2017. Penton, the Farm Progress Show's parent company, is paying for the expansion. For now, Wild said the focus on accommodating all the exhibitors interested in being at this year's Farm Progress Show. "It's amazing how many folks want to be part of this show," Wild said. The Illinois Soybean Association is among the exhibitors planning on increasing its footprint at the show, said Jane Godfrey, the group's communication coordinator. "It will have a space inside the original exhibit field like it has in the past, plus an additional lot in the expanded area," Godfrey said. "The additional space allows it to provide information and examples of double crop rotations," she said. The double crop plot is a partnership between the Soybean Association, GrowMark, Syngenta, and Limagrain. It's nice that we'll have extra space to provide even more of a hands-on experience, Godfrey said. With the weather this year, producers are looking for more answers and advice. They're coming to the show because they're looking for what to try next. As the site continues to be built up, Godfrey said more farmers will be interested in attending the show. It will only draw more people, Godfrey said. We love to be at the show and close to farmers. Richland Community College is supporting Farm Progress Show organizers as the expansion is completed, said Greg Florian, the college's vice president of finance and administration. It's a natural progression as it continues to grow, Florian said. We're home base for them. This is a premier site. The expansion is coming together rather quickly after a drainage pond was filled in, Florian said. The south side of the exhibit field toward the main part of Richland's campus was the logical pick for the expansion because of the way it was sloped, requiring less grading before it was completed, he said. A sewer system's in place under the expanded show site, Florian said. All the work is being done as more than 600 exhibitors are interested in being at the show. For once, Wild said, the exhibit field has room to spare with open lots and no interested exhibitor being turned away due to lack of space. Farm Progress Show manager Matt Jungman looks back at when the site was originally developed in 2004 and 5, and he said it took 305 days to get the work done then. It has blossomed since then, Jungman said. It continues to grow. Exhibitor demand is as strong as ever. It's going to be a good place going into the future. Wild said crops for field demonstrations are progressing well, and his hope is the weather cooperates so the fields will be dry enough come showtime. The focus in the coming weeks is making sure all the tents in place, but so far, Wild said, more tents are up than by this time in previous years. The frame of the main varied industries tent is up. Let's try that again. The frame of the main varied industries tent is up, but Wild said the expansion needs to be ready in the next few weeks, as a second will be added in the area. End of the article. Next article, Sister Cities Trip Excites Students. This is by Valerie Wells from the Herald and Review. Decatur, being part of the Sister Cities program is a once-in-a-lifetime event. Nearly all the high school students who recently returned from a three-week trip to Sevetal, Germany, use those words in describing their experience. Decatur has two sister cities, Sevetal and then also Tokorozawa, Japan. American students stay with a host family and attend the German equivalent of a high school while they're there. The school was really great, said Caitlin Barnes. We got an hour-long lunch break. Students stay in the classroom and the teachers come to them. German teens can't get a driver's license until they're 18. So even though several of the Decatur students have American driver's licenses, they couldn't drive either and learn to use public transportation as their German counterparts do. Fast food and soda are a much smaller part of a teen's life in Germany, Barnes said. The drink of choice is usually sparkling water without ice. Something else that caught their attention, said Sydney Trimble, is that the school was decorated with student art murals. Student art is displayed in American schools, too, but not painted directly on the walls. One of the coolest things is they had lots of art on the wall, said Gillian Kimmons, and an art project was underway where students were allowed to paint at specific sites on street corners, creating graffiti-style art. They visited several historical buildings that were hundreds of years old, many of them churches and sites devoted to memorials to the victims of the Holocaust. There were many more death camps in Germany during World War II than people realize, said Tatiana Crow, and Germans take the preservation of artifacts and history of that time seriously. The only boy in the group, Haven King Nobles, had a sports injury that he was afraid might keep him from going, but his doctor gave the okay, and his host dad let him borrow a leg brace to help him get along while he was there. Their home was spotless, at least until I got there, King Nobles quipped. That's the end of that article. Next article is by Kurt Erickson from the Herald and Review. Legislators' peace efforts meet deaf ears, says the headline. Springfield. Despite attempts by a Republican colleague to play peacemaker, State Representative John Bradley says he's not abandoning his politically charged investigation into salaries being paid to Governor Bruce Rauner's top aides. In a hearing Tuesday, Republican State Representative David Harris called on the Democrat from Marion to end a series of the weekly hearings designed to shed light on how much the governor is paying his top aides. "I would ask you to desist in this effort," said Harris, the ranking Republican on the House Revenue and Finance Committee, which is chaired by Bradley. "Let's put it to rest." At the same time, Harris also blasted the Rauner administration, saying letters being sent to Bradley by Rauner aide Rich Goldberg are hurting efforts to bring the issue to a close. "Those issues have got to stop," Harris said. They're an insult to the chairman of this committee. The letters are not helpful. They do not move the negotiation process forward. At issue is a dispute over how much Rauner's paying his top staff. Bradley says that he believes they're paying an estimated $1.7 million more than what former Governor Pat Quinn set aside for his key employees. The governor's office says the amount is actually less, and in what is viewed as a significant breach of decorum by lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, is not attending weekly hearings scheduled by Bradley. A similar scenario unfolded Tuesday, in which the administration was a no-show for a hearing chaired by Bradley. Instead, Goldberg again sent a letter to Bradley suggesting that residents in his southern Illinois district support Rauner's call for major changes to laws governing collective bargaining, prevailing wages, worker compensation, and civil justice. Democrats contend Rauner's proposals amount to union busting. But, wrote Goldberg, holding sham hearings to rehash questions already answered in another committee is not a step toward compromise. Bradley, who may face a Rauner-backed opponent in the 2016 election cycle, said the hearings will continue because the budget cuts being sought by the governor could be offset by some of the $1.7 million difference in the salaries he's paying. "That may not be a lot of money to someone in Chicago, but down in my area, that would pay for a juvenile detention center. It would pay for summer jobs. It would pay for an autism program. That's a lot of money to folks I represent," Bradley said. "Don't send me a letter from Chicago telling me how the folks I represent feel," Bradley said, adding that Goldberg is not being respectful toward a constitutionally elected body. Harris said both sides need to stop and begin focusing on the budget impasse that has left state government in limbo 4 weeks into a new fiscal year. "I don't think these committee hearings or the letters in response to the committee meetings are helpful in any way," Harris said. End of article. Next article about Forsyth Park. "Softball Tournament a Hit at Forsyth Park" by Chris Lisvardi from the paper staff. Forsyth. The wait to host a national softball tournament in Forsyth Park has been a long one. As it turns out, following the ASA-USA softball age 50 and over men's fast-pitch national tournament over the weekend, the wait appears well worth it. The competition featured seven teams from Ontario, Michigan, Ohio, and two from California, in addition to Clarkson Grain Legends of Cerro Gordo and Noren Farms of Villa Grove. "It's a nice tournament," said Jerry Stewart of Mattoon, who is the Illinois Amateur Softball Association president. "This isn't a big one. We don't want a big one for this size of park. This is a perfect fit." The facility worked as hoped, said Terry Hamill, executive director of the Decatur Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, which helped to bring the event to Forsyth. Two fields being used are close together with a building for concessions and restrooms in between," she said. "The diamonds are really good," Hamill said. "The grounds crew is on it. The park is in a convenient location, being close to nearby stores, restaurants, and hotels," Hamill said. Stewart was among those looking around to scout out familiar faces, some he hadn't seen in more than 20 years. That's part of the reason he wanted the tournament to be staged in Forsyth. Others, including Dick Baldwin of Macon, found holding the event in Forsyth an opportunity to watch softball like they have in the past without having to travel far. Baldwin said he enjoys his watching fast-pitch softball and was there for the tournament starved Friday and again most of Saturday. "I missed it," Baldwin said. "I wished it was here more often. I see a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time." Don Thompson of Cowden was interested in the tournament for similar reasons after not playing softball since 1995. "There are some old-time legends," Thompson said. "I see some familiar faces. Having the park full of action is just what officials in Forsyth have been hoping for as they've been making changes to allow such tournaments to be held," Mayor Marilyn Johnson said. Among the revision was allowing liquor licenses to be issued for beer to be sold in the park. Johnson took part in the evening by throwing out the first pitch Friday and helping to present the trophy Sunday. The Coburg Force team from Ontario won, with Clarkson Grain coming in second. "We had such a good turnout," Johnson said. "Having the local team here brought a lot out. It's great making use of the park." Johnson sees the local benefit to hosting such events for having more use for hotels, restaurants, and Hickory Point Mall, plus raising money for the Forsyth Youth League. The Youth League took care of the scoreboards and concession during the tournament. Stewart was happy with all the help to support the event. "They've done a fantastic job putting on the tournament," Stewart said. "We couldn't ask for a better group." In addition to the softball and baseball fields, Johnson said plans are continuing to install a disc golf course in the park that could be opened by the end of August. The park could then host disc golf tournament, she said. "We need to have more entertainment and use of the park," Johnson said. "Hopefully we'll have two more softball tournaments again next year." The opportunity to see softball isn't over yet for this year, though. The ASA Men's Fast Pitch Invitational State Tournament will be held Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in the park. The state tournament is expected to be larger by a few teams. End of article. Next headline, children get bite-sized turtle lessons. This is by Valerie Wells of the paper, Decatur. Attention spans are short when children are small. That's why activities at Rock Springs Nature Center, I'm a Turtle Camp for kids 1 to 5 years old, were short and fun and concentrated on information easily digested by tots. "What does a turtle eat?" asked naturalist Jenny Carver. "Would they eat camp counselor Miss Terry Dawson? Do they eat spaghetti and meatballs? Macaroni and cheese?" "Most turtles," she said, "live on bugs and worms, and the box turtles are at the center like grapes. Turtles can pull their whole bodies into their shells and hide when they're threatened and want to sleep." And she picked up a small hand puppet to show the kids that other creatures have similar shells. "What is this?" she asked. "A bunny," said Carter Sheepneep, aged 3. The adults in the room laughed, and Carver explained that no, it's a snail. It's bite of the plush antenna that did bear a striking resemblance to bunny ears. "Snails can withdraw into their shells, too, if they need to," she added. "Younger children," Garber said, "have not developed a fear of wild things or getting dirty that older children sometimes do, and accompanied by a trusted adult can develop a love of all things outdoors that will last their whole lives. The point of the camps is to give them a chance to meet other children, let parents connect with other parents, and allow all of them to explore nature together. It gives us a chance to get out of the house, and I like that I can come with them," said Quinn Devlin, who brought his 2-year-old Brody and his baby sister Adeline, 3 months. Carter Schnepp and brother Connor, 17 months, had been to a previous minicamp, and their dad, Nathan, and enjoyed it enough so that their parents brought them back Thursday. "Carter wore his name tag for days afterwards," said Mom Carrie. End of article. Okay, county may launch canine training, says the next headline. This is by Ryan Voiles. Decatur, a new donation could allow Macon County to start a 2-year pilot program for a canine training facility. Lieutenant Jonathan Butts said the Macon County Sheriff's Office has received a donation of $108,931 from Howard G. Buffett Foundation, which would allow the hiring of a recently retired city officer to provide courses in canine certification. "We see it being a self-funded program with police and sheriff departments from all over the state coming here to get their dogs certified," Butts said. "The donation would be used to cover the 2 instructors' salary and benefits over the next 2 years. 6 dogs and 6 handlers would be in each course, with 5 courses per year. Certification for canine handling would require an 8-week course. The plan was passed unanimously by the Macon County Board's Justice Committee. It's expected to be approved by a full board at its August meeting." In other business during the meeting, the state's attorney's office was one of the first to present its budget ahead of budget hearings set to be held in the coming months. Its presentation showed how difficult it may be for some departments to meet the 3% reduction expectation in their budgets. In the past 3 years, the state's attorney's office has reduced the number of attorneys from 22 to 16 and has cut support staff by at least 3 people who were not replaced when they left the office. Even so, Finance Committee Chairman Jay Dunn asked the office to present a budget at the later finance budget hearing that reflects only the health cost increase and something in a similar format to explain what will be needed to get a 3% reduction. There might be some consensus from the Finance Committee where if you don't tell us how to cut it, we'll just cut it off. Let me reread that. It's the last sentence in the article. There might be some consensus from the Finance Committee where if you don't tell us how to cut it, we'll just cut it, he said. End of the article. Last article in the news section here, House Dems reject pay increases. Springfield, Illinois lawmakers moved to dump an automatic pay increase Tuesday, saying accepting a 2% raise looks bad during the ongoing budget stalemate. This is by Kurt Erickson, Springfield Bureau Chief. On a 101-1 vote, the Democratic-controlled House turned down the cost-of-living increase after 42 minutes of sometimes heated debate. The proposal, which has become a favorite whipping post to Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, now heads to the Senate. This bill is just another effort to meet the governor halfway, said House Speaker Michael Manigan, Democrat, Chicago. Rauner has spent the past weeks mocking Democrats who control the General Assembly for failing steps to reject the raises, which boost their $67,836 base salary by more than $1,300. The increases were first in 7 years. Republicans cheered the fact that Democrats called the plan for a vote. It's about time. Those of us on this side of the aisle have been clamoring for this for weeks, said State Representative Tim Butler, Republican of Springfield. We make good money here. We have a severe budget crisis in this state. Some Democrats also said they were pleased. The number one issue facing our state is a budget deficit, said State Representative Brandon Phelps, Democrat Harrisburg. We need to take sensible steps to closing the budget deficit, and letting a pay raise go into effect for state lawmakers is not a responsible thing to do. Other Democrats, however, said Rauner's treatment of the pay hike issue was overblown. State Representative Robert Martwick, Democrat Chicago, said the raises only amount to an extra $236,950 in a budget that's at least $4 billion out of balance. Realistically speaking, this does nothing to solve our problems, Martwick said. State Representative Will Davis, Democrat Homewood, cast the lone no vote. Killing off the raises, however, appeared to do little with loosening the gridlock that has kept Rauner and lawmakers from agreeing on a spending plan for the fiscal year that began July 1st. While social service agencies pare back or cancel services to seniors, the disabled, and children, Rauner is demanding a series of anti-union changes in state law that he said will help boost the economy. He earlier vetoed a budget sent to him by the Democrat-controlled House and Senate, saying it was out of balance by $4 billion. Quote, Governor Rauner appreciates today's action in the House and thanks all those members who showed leadership on this issue, unquote, spokesman Lance Trover said. Madigan said the legislature is enmeshed in a historic struggle. Just as Rauner says he's compromised, Madigan said the House has offered the governor proposals addressing his push for changes to worker compensation laws, property taxes, business development, and now legislative pay. In four separate instances, we've made a good faith effort to meet the governor halfway, Madigan said. But he said Rauner cannot expect Democrats to abandon their base of supporters on issues such as workman compensation reform. We are not going to use the government to force injured workers to welfare or to the emergency room, Madigan said. The Senate is expected to take up the issue when it returns to action August 4th. We encourage President Cullerton to swiftly move this legislation to the governor's desk for his signature, Trover said. The legislation is House Bill 576. End of this article. Next article, Stu Ellis. Cow census sets table for lower prices. Once a month, the U.S. Department of Agriculture counts the cattle in large feedlots and gets a good idea about how much beef is headed to the market. The agency does that frequently because it's easy to count the number of head in a confined area. What's more difficult is counting the number of cows and their calves on open ranges, information primarily used in the USDA's January 1st and July 1st cattle inventory. The cattle inventory indicated a potential noteworthy trend at the first of this year, and last Friday's release of the July 1st cattle inventory confirmed that the number of cattle in the United States is increasing. That is a big deal since the increase in the U.S. cattle herd hasn't been seen since 2006. Prior to that, there had been a 10-year decline in cattle numbers that followed a short-term increase in the mid-1990s. The USDA staff enumerators reported the U.S. beef herd totaled 98.4 million head, 2% above the 96.3 million on July 1, 2014. There is still a $15 million head drop over the past 25 years. The reason for the turnaround is twofold. First, there's a 10-year cattle cycle of up and downs, and it was time for an uptrend. What made it possible for the best overall pasture and range conditions in many years in states east of the Continental Divide. With good grass from resurgent rains in the southern plains, cow-calf operators retained their heifers and began rebuilding herds. Cowboys could have gotten record prices by sending heifers to feedlots. Instead, they invested in the future by saving 6.5% of their heifers to expand their herd. Compared to a year ago, the number of beef cows with calves was up 3%, and the 2015 calf crop was up 2%. That means there will be a lot more feeder calves headed to feedlots this fall and next spring. Unlike the January 1st cattle inventory report, the July report doesn't show cattle numbers on a state-by-state basis. The January report showed several southern plain states that had expanded beef cow numbers in 2014. When paired with a drought map, those states have been in moderate to severe drought for the past several months. This year, those states have experienced improved moisture that came just in time for the 10-year cattle cycle to turn up. Livestock economists believe 2016 prices for beef will be relatively high compared to prior years, but they warn cowboys to look for prices to slowly erode rather than collapse. The main driver behind slow declines in fed cattle prices in coming months will be increased beef supplies, followed by an abundance of pork and poultry in the grocery stores. Recent high fed cattle prices haven't automatically led to profits for cattle feeders because of the cost of feeder calves and the cost of feed. That is one reason for the decline in beef numbers. The USDA's other report on Friday was the Cattle on Feed report, and it indicated the number of cattle in feedlot was up by nearly 2% from July of last year. That is a number of steers and heifers on full feed ration and headed for the slaughter market. The Cattle on Feed report also confirmed the number of heifers entering feedlots was down a record 7% compared to a year ago, the most since USDA began compiling statistics in 1996. The message to the consumer is that bargain pork prices will continue and beef prices will be dropping in the meat case. So throw a steak or chop on the grill and look for more want ads for cowboys. End of the article. And end of section one for the Decatur Herald Review. This is Debbie saying talk to you soon.